You're listening to the Hunter Squire Radio.
Welcome to Gun Squire Radio. I'm Bo.
And I'm John David.
JD.
Hey, Bo. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
It doesn't matter. They're listening at any time.
I know.
Time is relative.
It is, but we want to, you know, be upfront about where we're at.
Yeah, no, that's true. You know, actually, I guess it does kind of communicate like, hey, you're about to get a kind of energy, and the energy is going to be like, we just woke up, or it's been a long day. You know, actually, for you, actually, both of those are kind of the same.
Both those things tend to be true.
But this is midday. Midday is like John David prime time, right?
It tends to be.
Yeah.
It can be.
Or super late if you're in the French Quarter.
What?
That's when John David becomes a different John David.
Oh, well, that's true. That's fair. That is definitely fair.
Yeah. Hey, you know where else John David's going to become a different John David?
Las Vegas.
The Las Vegas Pipe Show. We are so excited, y'all. We're going to be there October 21st through the 23rd. That's going to be just absolute blast. If you've never been to a pipe show, you've been hearing us talking about this. This is a one that you're not going to want to miss. Pipe carvers. You got tobacconists. You've got pipe enthusiasts. And then you've also got amazing personalities and talents from all over the pipe community that are going to be there. You know, this is being run by our boy, Brian Levine, who knows what he's talking about. This is somebody who has deep level industry knowledge. He has been in the game for quite some time. There's a reason we kind of refer to him behind the scenes as kind of a godfather.
Yeah.
Not quite an Obi-Wan. Well, maybe an Obi-Wan. like a young Obi-Wan. Like a young, like an Ewan McGregor Obi-Wan.
What? We don't want to make Brian feel too good.
Well, we don't want to make him feel too bad. I know. he ain't Alec Guinness. I'm just saying. But like he's out here, man. And we know he's doing a great job.
He's doing a great job. Yeah.
It's going to be awesome. We are actually going to be doing a live Country Squire Radio there on site at 5 o'clock on that Saturday. And so you're going to want to be there for that. You're going to want to be there for a lot of great reasons. But also, if you've always wanted to see a Country Squire Radio live, that's something that you've wanted to experience. The fact that it just happened to be at Las Vegas International Pipe Show, man, that's just the icing on the cake. You got to be there. We hope to see a bunch of y'all. Make your plans right now. Get your tickets, and we're gonna have a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah,
it's gonna be great. Hey, man, you know, one of the things that is great is this show, which would not be made possible without the amazing support of our patrons. Man, we got a new patron that's supporting us just at the patron level, Tom Hogson. So, Tom, thank you so much for your support. And, you know, the great thing is, you know, for just $1 an episode, it goes a long way to help make this show happen. And big shout out to all the patrons that are doing just that.
Man, absolutely. Thank you so much, Tom, for your support and everybody that gives every single week and every month. Man, we're very grateful.
Absolutely. All right. So today, man, we've got a father episode.
Yeah.
You know, when we were thinking about this series and thinking about topics that we wanted to talk about as kind of fathers and just kind of like using kind of a broad therapy session, you know, like a miniature kind of like personal therapy session that honestly, over the course of podcasting, that's what it ends up becoming is like, here's two guys that need a podcast to be able to talk about their feelings. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I don't know, a therapy session in the way that like two bros would get together and like, you know, just talk about, hey, dude, what's up on your
life? I guess that's my point. I mean? Like, it's not a real therapy. It's like a fake one. Like a,
like it's a not real therapy.
It's not real therapy.
It's fake therapy.
Yeah. It's a podcast. It's not real therapy. It's a podcast. That should be a podcast episode. But anyway, like, you know, kind of the therapeutic practice of just kind of opening up.
Yeah,
I think,
sure.
And doing so. And I think also, you know, we've got like hopes for what this series has been and will be, which is kind of, you know, also kind of displaying that like, you know, those conversations can happen. And it's an important thing to do is to kind of like wrestle through some things as imperfect as we are as people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way in which that kind of overlaps in a great way to talk about the imperfections is in fatherhood.
Yeah, sure. I'm reminded how, you know, daily through fatherhood, how very imperfect I am.
Absolutely. Well, and that goes into the subject matter. So I think it says something. Maybe I don't think about who we are as fathers, but maybe sometimes how we see each other as fathers.
Yeah.
As like one of the first ones we were like, all right, we want to make sure we would do an episode about failure.
Right out of the gate, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's also like, man, but failure, it's like you want to talk about that because it's important, but we also want to highlight like, okay, well, maybe there's some places where we didn't totally mess it up, you know?
Yeah. Well, so that's the thing, success and failure. And both of these things are so hard. Like, first of all, what does that even mean? Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
and I think that's needs to be addressed. We're not necessarily talking about like, you know, like looking ahead, and this child went off and became a productive citizen and is out here, you know, doing
pays
good stuff.
Pays his taxes,
goes to church and, you know, whatever. No, what we're talking about is like in the moment, right? Yeah. Like those moments that you have and kind of the time, like right now, you know, like kind of that quantifiable data. I'm sure our children will go to actual therapy to figure out exactly how we're constantly failing in ways that we have no earthly idea.
Oh, I'm already saving for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's not a wedding fund. That's your therapy.
Yeah, that's your right. You'll need it for the wedding too.
Yeah. That's great.
No, there's a lot in which, you know, you go through life and you're like, oh, I'm glad I handled it that way. And a lot of times, more often than not, you're like, man, I really wish I would have had the foresight or grace to handle that differently.
Yeah.
I think for me, those are the times when I'm trying to learn to ask my kids for forgiveness and grace, you know, and literally ask them, like,
that is so huge.
Literally ask them,
yes,
you know, and this is a 3-year-old human I'm talking about.
Right.
And it's like, you know, when you mess up, and you're going to mess up every day, you know, how do you approach these little humans that you're, you know, have the potential to download all your stuff onto and say, you know, hey, you know, honey, I want you to know the way I handled that was wrong.
Right.
Can you forgive me?
Yeah.
And you want to talk about throwing you on your face, but like, it's really, that's powerful.
Modeling humility like that is critical too.
Yeah.
Like, and how, like, hey, when you screw up, you're going to screw up, and this is how you own your stuff.
Right.
Like, this is I think that is something that, you know, all right. So I want to kind of put some caveats on that.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
There needs to be that for like the series as a whole. But like, I think that a lot of times when kind of assessing ourselves as fathers, it's going to happen. Like we're going to be we're stuck in between these two generations.
Mm-hmm.
We're raising up this new generation, and we are also influenced by the generation that came before.
Yeah.
And so, and in the successes and failures that come before. So I think it's good to just point out, because, you know, Mama Cole's probably listening, and like, you know, like,
sure,
our parents may tune in, and beyond that, I mean, like, I just think it's important to say, like, you know, our parents, we love our parents, and they did a good job, and they did an imperfect job, you know, like, and as we are currently striving to do a good job through our imperfections as well.
Right. Yeah.
And I mean, like, that's just the reality. And so, like, there's nothing but, I think I speak for both of us. There's nothing but like love and respect that we want to kind of put out to our parents as we kind of wrestle through some.
Yeah,
of this.
No, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that's where I kind of tend to, you know, as I'm working with my kids, as I'm, you know, interacting with them, I try to think about, where did my parents, like, maybe not get it perfect, but then it wound up perfect. It wound up okay.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Like, you might not have understood in the moment, but then you look back.
Yeah,
like,
and maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe they, you know, didn't handle it the best, but like it worked out fine.
Sure.
You know, and like, and you know, and so you kind of have to go through it like, you know, I want to interact with my kids in a wholesome, wonderful way, but also show yourself enough grace to know, like, okay, you're going to get it wrong. And when you do, like, be courageous enough to ask for, you know, for forgiveness and humble yourself and try to do better and give it to the Lord. You know, that's where I try to maintain a standpoint.
Well, you know, the other thing too, is there's a lot that we have to deal with that our parents just didn't, which is true of them. Like they had to deal with a lot of things their parents didn't.
Yeah.
Like, the world has changed so much in our lifetime.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, technology alone, you know what I mean? Like, so I honestly feel,
oh my gosh,
that our,
what a disaster.
and I realize the ironic nature of like addressing this. I feel like our parents' generation treated cigarettes the way that we need to treat social media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, okay, you know, like, obviously tobacco, not bad. We're not going to say that on this podcast,
right,
one way or the
not
other.
Not on this podcast.
But there is a truth in that, like, there are consumption methods that are bad. There are practices that are bad.
Yeah, sure.
And so like the tobacco is not evil, but the way in which you use this could be unhealthy. And a lot of people are using it in unhealthy ways.
Yeah.
And so they
you try to protect your kids from that.
You try to protect your kids. And so in the same way, now we see, like, you know, the way in which social media has totally warped you know, our generation, and like now is like we're having to backtrack and like watch our parents' generation as they're trying to like process the internet and everything. And so like there's it's kind of an interesting nature the way that goes. But so there's just all of these different things that kind of go into it. But, you know, right now we're at this kind of precious moment as fathers where our kids are, they're not yet teenagers. They're not yet having to deal with that. That's some of that's starting to be there. In fact, one of my daughters, my youngest daughter was at a friend's house and she was telling us about Harry Styles. It was like a musician.
Yeah. He's one of those, what's the band they're in?
I don't know.
You can't call them bands anymore. They're just little.
Is it like a singing group or is it?
Yeah, no, it's one of those little like Backstreet Boys.
You can't know that was 90s. Trust me, that's not what.
No,
it is.
No, I know, but I'm telling you, it's like that. He's in one of those groups, and I can't think of what that group is. But anyway, go ahead.
So she's talking about Harry Styles and wants to play the music and everything. I'm like, all right, well, yeah, sure. Like, how'd you hear about Harry Styles? I mean, which you know, no ill will towards Harry Styles. Just curious as to how you heard his music, since not something we normally listen to. And she's like, oh, yeah, I was at my friend's house and she was playing it on the iPad in her bedroom. She also has an Alexa in her bed. I'm like, wait, what?
An Alexa in her bedroom.
Yeah, like all of this stuff. And I do understand to some extent stuff because you can drop in on Alexa, you know, and you can like listen in and everything.
Yeah, if you're, you know, mommy and daddy.
Yeah.
Trying
to make sure everything's all right.
Kids are doing everything kosher. Yeah,
exactly.
No, it's hard to know how to parent kids nowadays with all this extra technology. Like you said, our folks had their own issues. I mean, you know, our parents grew up right after the, you know, kind of mass adoption of television and
that's right. Yeah, yeah.
And that kind of thing. And then, you know, our generation, we, you know, grew up when the internet finally came around. And so, you know, had to learn how to had cell phones in college, although they weren't smartphones, you know, but man, kids nowadays, they do have smartphones in college. And now it's like, you know, you're 3 years old and you've got, you know your way around an iPad and can download apps and play Minecraft. And it's like, so how do you do that? We in our minivan, we bought a used minivan several months ago, and it's got a DVD player in it. And it's like, well, I didn't grow up with that.
Right, exactly. You know? Yeah.
We tell our kids like, well, I mean, they're excited. It's like, oh, it's got TV in the minivan. And it's like, well, it does, but we're only going to use that on road trips.
Right, right, right.
Like, you know, the DVD player, the DVD fairy only works during road trips.
Right.
She only delivers the DVDs on road trips. Right. And so, you know, but it's like, how do you, they're going to interact with this stuff. They're going to, you know, get exposed to their cell phones and iPads and everything else. But so how do you just kind of, you know, sand off some of those hard edges that can just teach them responsible use of it? I don't know. Yeah. We're getting away from success.
This always happens with father.
But it
father.
Does. It does.
Yeah, we always end
inevitably
up.
Inevitably does.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of going off on these rabbit trails. But okay, you know. All right. So let's talk about failure first, because that way we can finish with success.
That's right.
I very much, you know, I know you're at a real, like, just stressful stage,
pivot point. Really.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it is stressful.
And I wanted to share with you. When my kids were about your kids' age, that was like my season of like my biggest like failure as a father so far.
Yeah. So far.
and a lot, and it wasn't, you know, it's a joint effort. The fact of the matter is we're not single dads. We're part of a team, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, our wives are very much in the mix. And, you know, one of the things that me and my wife struggled with early on with the kids, especially once the second one showed up, was, you know, what I kind of referred to is we were kind of parenting against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like our styles were very, very different. And part of that is because, you know, the models that we grew up with were very different. And like the way that in her family in general, confrontation looked very different than confrontation in my family. And I was bringing a lot of that energy and she was bringing the different kind of energy into it. And more often than not, you know, especially when it came time to kind of get on to the kids, she would be very kind of coddling. She would be kind of standoffish, and I would overcompensate and I would come down too hard.
Too hard. Yeah.
And it became a really, really frustrating time because like I became just this, you know, I would raise my voice and I would, you know, stomp my feet and all that kind of stuff. And the reality is she helped me see this is that our children, for one thing, are very different. Like we've got two children. And the way in which they react to the world and the way in which they receive things, totally different.
They're people. Different.
Extremely different. For one thing, my oldest is so much like my wife and my youngest is so much like me. And like the way in which I relate to them. Now, and back then I was just like, no, you know, like everybody's getting treated equal and I'm going to come down hard in this exact way on everybody and everything else. And the fact of the matter is I had to raise my voice and I had to be, you know, a little bit more of like that dad mode presence more often with my youngest. Whereas when that happened with my oldest, she didn't need that. That destroyed her.
It kind of crippled her in some way.
Oh, absolutely. I was like a horrific figure to her.
Yeah, it destroys her spirit. Yeah. It's hard, you know, because you and your wife, me and my wife, we have the tendency when we're not on the same page to send these mixed messages to the kids.
Yes.
But then the kids are incredibly different themselves. And so they're going to take this. Okay, let's say you do get your message together, but if your message doesn't really correspond to how this kid is understanding or relating, you say the same thing to both kids at the same exact time, but one of them takes it one way and the other takes it another way. It's hard to know how to do that. Yeah. I think some of my biggest failures as a father have been around anger.
Yeah.
Just anger.
Yeah.
Of times when I had something I wanted to do or there was a goal or some type of thing that was supposed to happen a certain way and it didn't happen because one of the kids was being a kid.
Right.
Right.
Right. And God forbid
they act like a 2-year-old.
Right.
It's almost like they're a 2-year-old. Yeah. Like, you know, and so the reaction, the sinful reaction, my mind from that becomes this anger component that is not healthy. And really, in some ways, is very, very hurtful and destructive. Mm-hmm. And so it's okay to be angry. Like, and we try to be good with our kids about like to talking about emotions and, you know, like, hey, it's okay to be angry.
Yeah.
And there are things we do when we're angry and it's okay to be sad. And, you know, there are things we can do when we're sad, you know, but when you just, you know, take it out on these little humans that, you know, that you've been blessed with, oh man, it's tragic. And so you have to repent of that and you have to figure out, okay, well, where do I go from here and how do I make that better? And, you know, trying to understand, like, you know, just like you tell your kids, like, okay, well, when you get angry, you count to 10, you know, or come find mommy or daddy.
Like, do y'all have Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood? Have y'all started watching that at all?
No.
Oh my gosh. You need, like, that is like, there is so many good, they do little jingles with little lessons.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one, when you feel so mad that you want to roar, take a deep breath and count to 4. Like, there's like little songs and so jingles cute. About like even like going to the bathroom and the order and the wash your hands and everything. Like, they're all different like things from practical to emotional. And it's all, you know, it's Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, like the characters from that.
Okay.
It's animated and it's just so special. And like, man, the kids loved it. And we used to use that all the time.
And it's like, well, okay, we need to tell the kids that, but like, take your own medicine.
Exactly.
Right.
It's yes.
like, take your own medicine. Like, I, you know, you have to, there are times when like, no, I need to calm down. I need to realize like I'm about to react out of a hurt stance that is not appropriate for the way that this child can understand what's happening. You know, so you have to really, you know, try to calm yourself and be tender. And I think that my biggest failures as a parent so far have been around that anger component. And, you know, obviously there's some shame there, but I think I have in some sense gotten a little better, you know, as I'm able to show myself a little more grace and understand that like, no, you know, you're not going to parent perfectly, you know, and that's fine, but let's just try to be more patient and more loving, seeking out teaching moments, understanding that like, man, these are little humans that are gonna act like that, and that's expected. And like, man, that's great. Let them be kids. You know,
I think something you said is so critical with that too. Is you go to your kids and you apologize.
Yeah,
and
not just because you're trying to like model it, but because like I need their forgiveness.
Right, that's the right thing to do.
Like I need their forgiveness. Like my daughter. Like if I, you know, don't handle something with her correctly, like,
yeah, but the reality of course is that they're not always going to forgive you.
No. And
you know what I mean?
And like they may not.
Yeah.
They may not. And the thing about asking for forgiveness is whenever you ask someone for forgiveness, and this just doesn't go with just parenting, you are giving them the opportunity
to
reject you.
Yeah.
You're doing that.
Yeah.
But that's still good for you.
No, that practice is important.
Yeah. It's still good for you. Yeah.
But I think sometimes we go into that with that mindset. And I'm working on this with the kids right now because they'll, you know, like, all right, you know, so-and-so won't forgive me. Like, you know what I mean? Like that's, Like, I said I was sorry and they won't forgive me. I was like,
that's up to them.
And you know, it's interesting because you do, like, there's that parenting mode mindset where you just immediately, like, tell so-and-so you're sorry, you know, like that whole thing. And, and it's like, no, wait, they don't have to forgive you. Like, you know, like ask, you know,
that's right.
Again, this is another Daniel Tiger's neighborhood. Saying I'm sorry is the first step. Then how can I help? So it's not, you know, saying you're sorry is good. And there's nothing, like, you should ask for forgiveness, but don't just stop there. Like, make good on it.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? Like the offense was made and acknowledging is important. And there's, like, asking for forgiveness is important, but you also made an offense that you need to actually take action to correct. And that's something that.
No, that's a great point.
That's a
great point.
And that's something that we're trying to, like.
You don't just stop there. There's a repentant part of it. You know? So, okay, there's a forgiveness part, but then there's a, what do you do now?
Yeah.
You know,
it's so interesting. So it's one of the things that we're trying to work on. I think it's something that, like, the church misses a lot too, because a lot of times we rush to, like, the forgiveness aspect of things and we don't deal with the, like, we need to, like, make good.
There needs
like,
to be some discipline.
There needs to be, well,
or
not
correction.
It's not even the discipline and correction element. And, like, I guess it's that if they don't take the action to, like, make good on it. Right. Like, but, like, that's the thing. It's the accountability of, like, no, you need to, like, an offense was made. You actually need to do something now.
Right.
And it's like, we point to, like, the grace of Christ and everything. And that's good. That's important. Mm-hmm. And that needs to fuel, like, the way in which we forgive. But there is, like, a justice element of, like, well, but you all, like, the offender needs to actually take action to correct it.
Right.
And, like, there's, I think there's a deficit that exists in a lot of churches where, like, you can't count on the church to teach that to your kids. Like, you have to,
and it's our duty to, we're the ones that need to.
100%.
Yeah,
absolutely. But yeah, so, okay.
That's interesting.
I'm curious, you know, you mentioned that you've been working on this. For me, man, I had there was a breaking moment where I was at a very low point.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my wife, and I've shared this with other couples that go on through hard times, because I think it's, you know, I have no problem sharing this, and obviously she does too. But, like, so she wrote me a letter. Mm. I think I've shared this with you before, but she wrote me a letter, and it was just, it cut me like a knife.
Yeah.
You know, like, it was rough. And I remember getting that letter, and, you know, it was just kind of one of these moments where I could get really mad because, like, you know, what she was doing, she was laying out her feelings and observations, which were all valid, but as feelings and observations, like, not all of this is fair, but they were all valid as her feelings and observations.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I could get, like really angry and, like, try to argue back to her and just kind of point out all of her failings and everything else. Or I could, like, own it and be like, you know what? No, I love this woman, this family, like, this is my family.
Yeah.
Like, it is my responsibility to, like, you know, deal with my stuff. And then also kind of get us back on track so that we're doing this together. And I say back on track. Honestly, we were never really
on the track.
Exactly.
Find it.
Exactly.
where the heck is it?
Yeah. And I mean, like, so, you know, and it was, you know, that moment, I find that as a father, the biggest moments of strength are when we find those moments of humility. I think we oftentimes, and I don't, you know, who knows where this comes from, but I think too often we run to this mindset of, like we have to, like, express that strength or express that rage or that power constantly. And it's almost like a deep defense is to, like, be, you know, offense, you know, sometimes. And this isn't universal.
But it's like, if we don't express that, then there'll be, like, a crack in the dam or something,
you know? Like that. And the reality is that, like, the true strength is when it's there, but it's in reserve. Like, you don't turn that on your family. So, like, finding those moments to be able to kind of lay down the sword and, like take a knee, is, like, that's a critical moment, I think, that my biggest failures have been when I haven't seen that as the right action. And my biggest successes have been recognizing that.
Yeah.
And being, you know, we started therapy, reading some different parenting books and you know, seeking out some, like, you know, stuff. And, you know, the great thing is, like, my wife is, like, amazing. Like, we've got a really, really solid marriage. And the fact of the matter is, when we get off, or, like, you know, once we kind of find our way back to each other, which is generally fairly quick, like, we both are interested in doing the work and not, like, you know, it's not about being right. It's about, like, being right together.
What do we, now we're on the same page.
Exactly.
Like, let's make this happen.
Exactly.
Yeah. And at that point, you're about, no, let's make it, let's get it done. Let's get the job done. you know.
And the thing is, once we figure that out, like, it's been pretty good. Cause like I'll mess up and I'll, you know, she'll have to pull me back in and I'll receive that. And then, you know, when she's not stepping up and then, you know, I'll kind of, you know, encourage her to do that. And,
yeah.
And like now it's fairly rare that that kind of stuff even happens. There's a process and we would get better at it and over time, and God knows we're not perfect and we're failing in other ways, but
yeah,
that's, you know, move towards success.
It's so amazing. And it's so incredible how marriage works. It really is such a perfect picture of the relationship between man and God. This community that you have with your spouse, if it's healthy, I think, again, this is from someone that hasn't even been married 5 years. So let me tell you my marriage book about, you know, I can autograph it for you if you want me to. But, you know, it's like you're constantly pointing each other to holiness, you know. You're constantly pushing each other towards...
It's a pretty idealized version.
It is, but that's the goal.
Right.
But that's the goal, is like pushing each other towards this, you know, ideal. And sometimes you see that happen. Sometimes you really do. You see that, you know, particularly, I feel like I benefit from that a lot, as, you know, I might handle something some way. And in our family structure, I tend to kind of, you know, drive the conversations and the ship and all that. But then I see my wife react to something in a more godly manner. And then I'm like, no, she's right. Like, she handled that right. Like, let's, you know, and so how do I take that and then use some of that knowledge or something I pick up from somewhere else and kind of lead our family in a better direction, you know, with that? I just constantly feel like I'm being gently guided and corrected, you know, in a healthy way.
I think it's about unity. Like, I don't know that holiness would be the word that I would personally use, but like, I think unity for sure.
Yeah.
And like, I love how you said community too. Like that kind of that spousal relationship in community.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And when it's not a team, and that was the thing for us, it wasn't like we weren't doing it together. We're like, mm-hmm. I don't think we were intentionally parenting against, like, it wasn't an intentional thing. I think I used to get so mad because it almost felt intentional.
Yeah.
And I mean, part of that was like, why isn't everybody listening to me? You know, like that kind of thing. And it's just, it is a mess.
Yeah.
But, you know, okay. So here's the other thing. Like, this is why I wanted to start off with kind of pointing out, I know you're at a really rough stage, or like a pivotal stage, I think is what you said.
Well, it is. It's a pivot point.
Yeah.
But, you know, we are in the middle of, I mean, we got two under three, you know.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, both of them are still in diapers.
Tough era.
It's tough.
It's a tough era.
We don't get a lot of sleep, you know, running a business. It's hard, but it's nothing, you know, people do it all the time.
It gets slowly better. I mean, I think it's probably going to get worse. I'm not at the worst part yet, but like it does get slowly better.
Yeah.
I mean, like right now, when I apologize to my kids, they respond and we can have conversations about it. That's a big thing, is when they can actually.
Yeah.
And they have questions and we can talk, and they're people. They're like more people now. You know what I mean?
Well, they've developed personalities and some of their identity.
Not that they weren't people before, but right. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And like, you know how to relate to them now because they've kind of shown you that. And, you know, we recently got an email from a listener talking about kind of the moments in which, you know, you spend with your children and the impact of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's so true, because like what I've found is, you know, the way I've been able to connect with them now through kind of what they love, you know, like one of them is big into biking and big into Avatar.
Yeah.
The cartoon show Avatar. Yeah. And you know, and I really love biking with her, and I've been watching that Avatar series and, you know, asking questions and generally interested. It's a cool series. It's fun to be able to bond over like a shared interest like that.
Yeah.
And the other one, she is such like a little, like, I mean, just, she just loves putting on plays and telling jokes and she's just the, you know, we occasionally we go down to the beach and do like a bonfire. And we'll play. I bring a speaker. We'll play music, and she and I are always dancing.
She's entertaining. She's like her daddy.
Yeah, she really is. And I mean, that's the other thing too, is, and we love to cook together too with her. But because of our similarities, I'm realizing the way in which I process anger is critical with both the kids. But I see my failures in her.
Hmm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is that, like, when I see her struggling, and when I see her fail, it looks like my failures. When I see my oldest fail, it looks more like my wife's failures. And it's not universal. It's true. You know, there's a mixture and everything else.
And you think they're picking that up from you.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, you can't not. But more, I think more importantly, rather than to internalize it like that, it's realizing like, oh, I can help you because I uniquely have experience in dealing with this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
Those,
I recognize that.
Yeah.
And I know what to do when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like, I think that that creates so many great opportunities,
mm-hmm.
you know, for that success. It feels weird calling it success because it doesn't seem like.
Yeah. I don't, it does feel weird. I think we should acknowledge that we have moments where like, no, that went well.
I nailed it.
Like, yeah.
Dad wins.
Yeah, that went well. Like, you know, or you know, you and your spouse, you made a decision together and it was the right decision and yeah. it was hard. But like, you know, we have that. Our kids are getting old enough now or, you know, if they don't get something from this parent, they get it from that parent, you know, and or they try to, right? It's like, well, daddy, you don't get the answer from this parent that you want. So you go ask the other parent.
Are you the no or the yes?
We're both generally the no.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting. And I think it's gotten to be that way where, yeah. you know, we're just kind of on the same page. And it's like, you know, I'm more of the no. And my wife is more of the no, but maybe tomorrow or no, but maybe some other time or no, but how's this for an alternative, you know? And like, it's kind of nice because it lets your kids know you're not, when you have that stance, you're not just shutting them down for the sake of shutting them down. Like you want to.
Hey, now, there's nothing wrong with shutting them down for the sake of shutting them down.
Well, sometimes
you got to teach them that.
Sometimes there need to be told no.
Exactly.
Because something is just flat out wrong or whatever. But it's like, you know, I didn't eat any of my dinner. You know, mom worked hard to make this, you know, meal, a nutritious meal for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to eat any of that, but I want, you know, a package of applesauce and some, you know, some goldfish. And it's like, well, no, baby, you can't have that because you didn't eat your healthy, nutritious dinner. And you know, I tell you, if you eat some of this stuff, then yeah, you can have some applesauce after that, but you need to eat some of this stuff, you know? And so it's just trying to find out, you know, how to not destroy your kids or shut them down, you know, so they think you're kind of, just out to get them or something. But it's sometimes you got to tell them no.
Yeah. Yeah. My answer is almost always no. You know what I mean? Like, it's just
our poor kids.
Well, but it's always no, but I always let them make a case for it. Like,
yeah.
like, you know, I'll say no. And I say, but you can make a case. And then, you know, I'll let them lay it out, make a case and be like, okay, no, I see your point. All right. Well, maybe so.
Okay.
You know, or then it's just, that's a good argument. It's still a no. That's a good argument. But yeah, man. All right. Success, failure. Any other kind of final thoughts before we move on here?
Yeah. You know, well, not really. I think I can't remember when I mentioned this, but maybe it was on last episode when you and I were talking about some of your new work stuff that you've kind of coming down.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And I said something like, well, you know, we're so prone to see the red lights and not the green lights. Mm-hmm. And I really do believe that. Like we as humans are just quick to focus on all the negative things, you know, and not the positive things. And so, and that goes for us, but it also goes for our relationship with our loved ones.
Yeah.
So,
big time.
You know, you think about your loved ones, well, they do this and they do this and yeah, they do that too. But so we treat ourselves that way. And then we treat the ones that we love most that way. And it's like, it gives you a reminder, like, man, let's find some of those green lights and be thankful for them, be happy for them and know that they're, you know, they're real blessings. So
yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it's good.
It's interesting. You know, I think we talked recently about kind of the iconic kind of imagery of fathers, you know, and like throughout history and that sort of thing. And, you know, the classic iconic dad sitting in the, you know, the chair with his pipe by the fire and that sort of thing. Probably.
Yeah.
Smoking some like a Prince pipe type situation and, you know, having all this wealth of information to pat little Johnny on the head as he tells him. And, you know, in the modern era, it's two dudes like us chilling out in Airbnb, sipping some tea and whiskey and having a conversation and smoking some good quality corncob pipes from our friends at Missouri Meerschaum.
Man, that is right. That is right. Of course, we're so thrilled to talk about their new series, the Back to Our Roots series, which is a collection of four pipes they've come out with that are kind of a homage to some of their more popular shapes and designs, but have a funky, you know, kind of different aesthetic to it with this really handsome green stem and this nickel ferrule on the end of the shank. So today we're talking about the Bracken, which is the cylindrical bowl. Bo loves this because he wants to release the Bracken.
Yes.
It doesn't get old. Man, it's got this cool, it's kind of like the Legend corncob pipe. It's got this cylindrical bowl with this angled cut top, which is very attractive. And it comes in a bent variety. It's a generous bowl. It has that angled top with a nickel ferrule. And then that Danish, you know, handsome stem, that acrylic stem, just really sets it off. But it's a filtered pipe that gives you the opportunity to, you know, have a versatile smoke. So very attractive, very handsome. It'll be a great addition to your pipe collection. And if you go to corncobpipe.com, the nice folks at Missouri Meerschaum will pack it right up to you safely and get it right to your front door.
There you go. And big thanks to our good friends at Missouri Meerschaum for sponsoring this show.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Pipe question of the week.
Pipe question of the week coming in from Dave Allen, aka Dr. Alien from Batcraft, which is our Minecraft SMP.
Nice.
He says, greetings, Bo and John David. I have been out of the tobacco buying game for a while, and while reviewing my cellar, I have found that more than half of my stock is of the discontinued variety. Oof. While I have a few favorites that I can still restock, I am in need of some new favorites. Can you guys recommend some good blends for the hobbyist who hasn't had the means to buy tobacco for a while now? Thanks for the help and this show that helps get me through the workday. Batcraft resident alien. Again, that is from Dave Allen. All right. So this, he's talking about, he's coming back to pipe smoking. It's been a minute. Yeah. All of his favorites, you know, are gone. And so you got these new kids on the block, man. What does he need to be reaching for?
Dave, great question. Dave, longtime listener of the show. And yes. Man, so thankful for you. Good to hear from you again. And a couple of tobaccos. I don't know how long it's been since you haven't smoked, you know, or you haven't bought tobacco. So I don't know what kind of time period we're looking here. If we're looking like, you know, you haven't bought tobacco in like 5 years, or if it's been like 1 year. I get the sense that it's been a little while. And so I'll give you a couple, I think, that are, you know, on the debuted maybe in the past 2 or 3 years that you might find kind of interesting. But one, GLP Spark Plug. This is a tobacco that came out, I think it came out in 2019. And it's delicious. Great tobacco. It's, you know, obviously a plug. You've got Latakia, Virginia's, and Oriental here. And it has done really, really well, highly rated. And, you know, anything, of course, from Greg Peace is going to be, you know, a sophisticated blend. It's a, you know, English style tobacco, very strong, spicy and smoky, but very, very thoughtful. So try that out. Another one is from our friend Eric Stokeby at Fourth Generation Tobaccos. Ooh, of course, love Eric, a dear friend of the show. And matter of fact, just saw him at the Premium Cigar Association conference in Las Vegas. Always good to see Eric. He has come out with some bulk tobaccos, which I think is really cool. I've been really happy to see these bulk tobaccos do well. And he's got a Virginia Perique blend, and it's the Virginia Perique Evening Flake Pipe Tobacco. Eric Stokeby, Fourth Generation. And that's a pretty new one. That's within the past year they've debuted this one. But it's fantastic. It's been hot pressed, and so it's just got a really nice matured flavor to it. You know, for your non-aromatic taste, you might want to check out those two tobaccos. And let us know what you think.
There you go. Great question, Dave. And hey, if you've got a question for the show, send it in. show@countrysquireradio.com.
Quick fire with the squire.
Quick fire question. Ow! All right, man. We are continuing on with John Coatney. You know, I've said it correctly. This is driving me crazy.
You're even trying.
I'm trying. Confirmed Pipe Smokers of Fiction and Literature edition. Are you ready, sir?
Yep.
The bookshop owner in The Neverending Story, or Charles Marlowe, the protagonist of Joseph Conrad's Heart of Darkness. Heart of Darkness is Apocalypse Now, right?
I don't know. The horror.
Right? No? Maybe?
I don't know.
You have to understand, like, John David looks so long. You know what The Neverending Story is, right?
I know what that is. Okay. And so I'll have to pick the bookshop owner from The Neverending Story. But that's the problem with me. I'm going to miss a lot of these references.
I don't remember the bookshop owner character at all in The Neverending Story smoking a pipe. Yeah. So I'd be like, it's just crazy. Okay. All right. There you go. Well, I'm going to go with that one as well for the same reason. Captain Ahab or Long John Silver?
Captain Ahab.
I mean, I got to go with the pirate. Come on, man. Long John Silver. Absolutely.
You just like his fish sticks.
No, actually, it's a tragedy. Listen, fast food fish is a bad idea. I don't care who you are.
That's a bad idea.
That was a terrible idea. Do not get fish from a fast food restaurant. What are you doing? Seriously. Long John Silver. I hate the fact that that's what comes. No, Long John Silver is an iconic, like, primordial pirate character that helped to establish the modern lore. And y'all are out here eating fish sticks on his name. Put some respect on Long John Silver's name.
I like his batter.
I want to keel haul you. All right, then finally, Mark Twain or William Faulkner. Now, that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's tough. As a Mississippian, I should say William Faulkner, but I'm going to say Mark Twain.
I mean, it's same and same. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be hard to not say Mark Twain in this matchup here, but love William Faulkner. Some of his works are very thought provoking and wonderful, and in some cases difficult. But I'm probably more of a Mark Twain guy.
Yeah, a proud resident of a favored city in Mississippi. Oxford, Mississippi.
Yeah, what's that little crummy city that?
You're talking about Starkville.
The real crummy city. that William Faulkner lived in. Yeah, anyway. If he had some class, maybe he would have come to Starkville. But. I'm just saying, no one can be perfect.
No, come on now. Nobody who's ever graduated from Mississippi State thought they came out classy. Now you're like, nobody's going to claim that now.
Man, it's a new day now. I mean,
no, that is true.
It's cool. I mean, I came out knowing how to, like, tie and we had shoes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I even, learned how to take vitamins and stuff. We came out all right.
No, to its credit, no, Mississippi State, it is a new day, but the new day started after you left, my friend.
That's probably fair.
All right, man. These are good quick fire questions. Of course, if y'all got some quick fire questions for us, send them into the show. That is show@countrysquireradio.com.
Your thoughts, your comments, listener feedback.
Listener feedback coming in from Randy Westbrook. He said, "Hey guys, had to contact you. I love learning art history from Bo. It was fun. Actually, turns out that Monet was a foodie too. His lunches Ooh. were well known and attended. Only downer was that everyone had to leave after lunch at a specific time, so they didn't interfere with his work. Good episode. Thanks, Randy Westbrook. Yeah, man, the Monet episodes were fun.
That did well. I really enjoyed, you know, getting to know the character there. And, you know, I think folks were, you know, it was well received.
It was. And it's so interesting. Like those episodes that go into kind of those Renaissance painters, it is not an area of history or like an industry that I've ever been particularly all that interested in prior to diving in. But ever since then, I've gotten like into it, man. Like that's just, there's some, I think every single industry and era had its own rock stars.
Yeah.
If you see it through the lens of that community, you know what I mean? Like, like you grow up and you're like, you're not looking at painters as like, oh, these guys were cool. You know, like you're not looking at those paintings and being like, you know, you're just like, oh, okay, yes, lady with the holding the umbrella, you know, like, you know,
right.
And that's about it. But then like when you
the stars that don't really look like stars, it look like someone sneezed on the painting. Yeah, they're right.
Exactly. But then you take the time and you hear some of these stories and you're like, man, these dudes were like freaking rock stars.
Yeah.
You know, for what they were doing. Yeah. And they were crazy. Some of them.
Yeah. Some of them, a lot of them were.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, I've really, it's been difficult not to go back to that. Well, pirates and painters. It's difficult not to go back to that. Well,
interesting. There's so many characters. Like, there's a reason why those people are fascinating. They're dramatic. They have interesting stories. They, you know, creatives do. A lot of creatives do, you know. And anyway, yeah, it's a good call. Randy, of course, our dear friend from Alaska, he recently sent me and Quinn some coffee to try from a coffee roastery up in Alaska. That was really neat. So,
man, he hooked us up with the axe head looking thing.
Knife, the carver, the plug cutter things that I think are actually used to cut like seal meat or something.
Randy, I use that every day.
Yeah, but you know, for us, they've become just household items that have been wonderful. Of course, they make a great tobacco plug cutter too. So
herbs and garlic, man, you can slice garlic so super thin. No, I'm serious, man. It's delicious what you can get out of that thing.
That's awesome.
I use it a lot. I hope it's okay that I'm using it for that.
I think he's proud of you.
Okay, good. Because that's exactly how I use it. It's awesome. all right. And then finally, man, we got one in from Charlie Young who said, hey, y'all, I enjoyed the show regarding JD's story about magic cards. I just wanted to pile on. When I was about 12 years old, I somehow talked my dad into buying me a starter deck of magic cards. Upon getting home, you're over here talking about holiness and you were playing magic cards.
Yeah, no, right.
All right. I just want to make sure that's just clear. Upon getting home, my mom wanted to take a look at them. And long story short, she ended up making me cut each of them in half and throw them in the trash.
No way. Oh, wow. I thought my story was bad where, you know, we walked into the place and mom wouldn't let me buy them. And man, Charlie's having to just chop them up, you know.
He said, icing on the cake was that Saga was based the basis of her Sunday school lesson the following Sunday.
Yes. Oh, man.
I feel that. I've never felt an email like this one.
I feel this one.
That's amazing.
I feel this one.
He says, I'll never think of magic cards without that memory. And again, that's Charlie Young from North Carolina. Buddy.
Oh, Charlie. And I'm sure there's been plenty of therapy sessions surrounding that, too. Oh my. Well, you know, like we said, sometimes parents handle it great and sometimes they're just like us.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful.
You know, it's funny. He talks about just not, you know, his dad bought him the magic cards. Yeah. You want to play these little card game, whatever, you know? And, you know, I wanted those magic cards so bad. I remember going to, I can't remember, you know, what kind of hobby shop it was. We went in there and, my mom got to look at him. She's like, I'm not buying you this trash. Like, I'm still a little bitter.
Oh, man. That's
still just a little bitter.
That's great. All right. Well, hey, you know, we love getting this feedback in. And, you know, I know it's interesting. You know, Father, it's a polarizing series. And I think it's something that we recognize. And we've gotten like some of the loudest, like it's like Ewoks all over again. Some people either love it or hate it. You know what I mean? Like it's Ewoks the series from that standpoint. But at the same time, you know, those that are enjoying it, I hope that you are. And the other thing too is, I think that it's created a lot of thought provoking emails and responses, and which has been really, really great. I think we want to showcase that a little bit more in the next couple episodes.
Yeah, sure.
Well, all right, man. Well, hey, always a cathartic experience to dive into the wonderful worlds of our failures and successes.
Yeah, we have such a deep plethora of failures to pull from, but you know, occasionally there's something to be proud of and be thankful for. So, yeah.
Well, hey, man, let's go have a day.
See you, brother.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.